Actually, I'm in Texas today.
Are you? Okay. Well, that's good. Glad to hear that.
Flew back late last night from Iraq.
Okay. Iraq. Okay. What's the reason for that visit?
Well, wanted to get some firsthand knowledge in terms of what's going on over there in the fight against ISIS. Actually, the Middle Eastern name for ISIS is a pejorative term called Daesh, and so I'm going to use Daesh from now on.
All right.
But anyway, I was looking. We have a bunch of Americans that are over there, as well as our coalition partners, that are training the Iraqis to conduct the fight, and also the Kurds. We also have substantial air assets that are used to keep Daesh off balance. And they're doing some amazing things. We don't have a very big footprint over there, but it's making a difference.
Well, where are they? Yeah, where are they? Pretty much.
Where's Daesh?
Where did you visit?
I was in Baghdad and Erbil.
Okay.
Baghdad, of course, the middle of the country. And then Erbil is the capital of the region of Kurdistan.
Okay.
And so we met with the Prime Minister of Iraq, a bunch of his cabinet members. We also met with the President and Prime Minister of the Kurdish regional government, and met with their cabinets as well, and came away with a great deal in terms of some of the challenges that they have in the area, as well as what's going well. I mean, the reason we've got this whole problem is the president decided to bail out at the end of 2011. When he decided that the war was over and declared it over, he didn't pay any attention to conditions on the ground, and it allowed Daesh to rise up and become a significant problem for the people of the region. And so now you've got, we've had to get re-involved back in Iraq. And I think as long as we stay true to course, we should have a good outcome. But we just need to make sure that we remain committed.
But as one member of this group that was there, what kind of a timeline do you think, and what kind of a commitment as far as men and or materiel to should be there?
In terms of a timeline, my best estimate based on what we learned is around 3 years from beginning to end, and we're about 9 months into this fight. And again, that's just a guess. We can't let the calendar control. We've got to let conditions on the ground control. That's where the president screwed this thing up to start with, as he just came up with a date on the calendar. A lot of the outcome is going to depend on how the Iraqis are in terms of their will to fight. I feel confident about the Kurds. I mean, the Peshmerga forces of the folks in Kurdistan are awesome fighters. They're warriors. They have already regained all of the territory that Daesh took from them when they going up. And, you remember for a while they have Mosul Dam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's back in Kurdistan control. And then the Kurds actually pushed Daesh onto the west outside of Kurdistan. Of course, that's got the Iraqis a little concerned because they're worried that the Kurds might try to come after Iraq.
Right.
So they're not going to. I mean, I feel pretty convinced they're not. But anyway, you've got all this nervousness up there because you've got three different peoples that are trying to fight one common war. You've got the Sunnis, the Shias, and the Kurds. And then the other influence that's a little bit bothersome is you've got a substantial Iranian influence that's in there controlling and funding these Shia military groups or militias. Now, the militias have been pretty effective in pushing back on Daesh. But at the same time, you wonder will there be a time when they turn and go against the Americans or the Iraqis? And so that's something we've got to keep in track.
Bill Flores is joining us this morning from here in Texas. Well, then real quickly, then your thoughts, because the president, of course, Iran is just to the east. He has said he will walk away from a bad deal if there's not a good deal being made. And we're past the deadline as far as a nuclear deal with Iran. So how do you feel there?
Well, that's the only positive thing I've heard from the president in terms of his Iranian negotiations. To me, there are some bright lines that we can't cross, and I hope that the president will adhere to these, but I don't have a lot of faith in him based on what he's done so far. The first thing is we've got to have absolute verifiability of everything. We've got to be able to verify. We should have unfettered access to all their defensive all their military positions, so that we can see what they're doing. The second thing is we've got to absolutely make sure that Iran has no path to a breakout so that they can create a military weapon using nuclear material. Those are a couple of things that have to happen. The third thing is sanctions cannot be lifted until Iran has proven that they're actually adhering to the agreement. Now, the Iranians want an instant lifting of sanctions, which I found incredibly offensive. So, you know, there's some critical elements we need to make sure in this deal. And if not, we should walk away and actually ramp up the sanctions against Iran. I lean toward the latter, just go ahead and ramp up the sanctions until they yell kafir open and start paying attention to what we're asking them to do.
Bill Flores joining us this morning. There's some Supreme Court rulings, but before we do that, the President and John Kerry are going to announce that there will be an agreement to open embassies in the U.S. and in Cuba. I'd like to get your thoughts there.
Well, the sense of Congress, based on the appropriations bills we passed, is that there will be no funding to do that. So the president can take it out of the White House budget if he'd like. But the sense of Congress is that we should not establish relationships with Cuba.
And you share that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Huge, yeah.
What?
I mean, look, some of the biggest human rights abuses in the world are coming out of Cuba. And so why do we want to, the president's always espousing about American values and how we shouldn't engage with people that conduct human rights abuses, and Cuba's one of the worst. So he talks out of both sides of his mouth on this, and I think until those things are dealt with, there should be no establishment of diplomatic relations with Cuba.
Finally, a couple of the Supreme Court rulings. Obviously, the one that got most of the headlines, same-sex marriage. Your thoughts there?
Well, it's unfortunate because, I mean, the question about same-sex marriage, I think, is best left to the states and to the voters. The key thing that bothers me about the Supreme Court decision is not the decision itself, it's the way they trampled the Constitution to get there. I mean, under our Constitution, the powers of our government come from the people, and they rise up through the states. And in this case, the Supreme Court basically said, we as the Supreme Court can impose this definition of marriage on 100% of the United States, irrespective of what the voters want, irrespective of what the states want. And so it trampled the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, and it also put substantial pressure on the ability to exercise religious liberty under the First Amendment. So the thing that we've got to do in Congress now is to try to come up with an overarching way to protect the freedom of Americans to be able to exercise a religious liberty. That's something, as the chair of the Republican Study Committee, I'm working on right now, along with Mike Lee, who's the chair of the Senate Steering Committee in the Senate.
Another one that was interesting, I thought, by a 5-4 vote, they voted against the EPA's effort to limit certain power plant emissions, saying that was an unreasonable thing for them to be doing.
Yeah, finally. I mean, that was about the only good decision we got out of the Supreme Court in this rush in the last week's worth of announcements. So I do believe that was done, decision was made correctly. It is a little bit late because, unfortunately, the power companies had already had to shut down several power plants in response to the rule. So the rule doesn't really help anything except for a precedent for the future onslaught of rules that the EPA is trying to cram down the Americans' throats.
While not a decision, finally the court said that they would hear, I guess in the next session, the case on the affirmative action race-based college admissions at UT. They had said before they wouldn't, sent it down to a lower court, asked the lower court to rule, and now they've decided that they want to listen to it. Are we seeing a new empowerment feeling in the Supreme Court?
Well, it certainly seems that way, and that's somewhat scary to me because the Supreme Court is supposed to interpret the Constitution, not make law. And I think, particularly if you look at the last 9 or 10 decisions, they've really gone into creating law, new law. And so I'm bothered by the what you call the sense of empowerment that they seem to have bestowed upon themselves.
Yeah, I believe Senator Cruz stood on the floor of the Senate and said, if you want to make laws, why don't you resign and come run for office like the rest of us did.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. He's exactly right. This court is troubling me substantially on some of the decisions they're making. I mean, you go back to the Obamacare decision for a minute. The language, again, this language was was drafted by the Democrats. It was 100% owned by the Democrats, and the president signed it. And the language says that the subsidies are applied to exchanges established by the states. Those words are crystal clear. And it does. And the states is uppercase, which means the 50 states of the United States. It doesn't say the Secretary of HHS or the federal government or the IRS or anybody else. And so the ability of the court to just ignore those words is just reprehensible.
Finally, and we're running short on time, but I did want to get your comments, because one of the comments that Steny Hoyer made, the Democrat Party, said, well, the happiest people with that Supreme Court decision are the Republicans, because they didn't have a plan ready to go anyway. So your thoughts there?
Well, I'd say that there is a partial accuracy to that, but it's not completely accurate. First of all, there were alternative plans that had been filed by Republicans. So actually, the one that has the most co-sponsors is the charge that I led with the Republican Study Committee. We already filed the plan several weeks ago. We've got over 70 co-sponsors of it, more than any other health care alternative that's been proposed. And it does all the things that Obamacare did not do. It improves access. It lowers cost. It improves the efficiency of the health care system. Those things were not done by Obamacare. So he was wrong on that. Now, where he is somewhat correct is that we were having trouble coming up with the transition plan that would be needed if the court had ruled in favor of King. If the court had ruled in favor of King, then you would have had a few million folks lose their subsidies, most of which were the people that lost their insurance because of the passage of Obamacare that took their plans away that the president said they could keep. And so we had built that transition to get from the effective date of the Supreme Court decision until we could put in a new patient-centered free market solution to health care coverage in this country, similar to the one that the Republican Study Committee came up with. So, you know, it did relieve the Republicans from that obligation or that question. How do you deal with that question? So that's off the table, but now we can focus on going back to the core mission, repealing this failed law, which is in a process of failing. As premiums skyrocket, these plans are going into death spirals, and the exchanges are going into death spirals, and then replacing it with a better solution that respects federalism, that puts the patient provider back together, and that adheres to free market principles. So we're in a position now to be able to do those two things.
Bill Flores joins us on Wednesdays. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time this morning, Bill.
You bet, Scott. I'd wish all of our listeners a very happy Independence Day, happy and safe Independence Day, and I look forward to visiting with you next week.
Great. Thanks for the time.